I hate to start the show off with the negativity and the complaining. So let me just send out some digital sage to clear the airway, to cleanse your auditory palate, and let's begin again. But damn, nobody got time for this. Chewing gum wrappers all on the little desk. I don't know where this grimy-ass keyboard came from. And it's old. I don't know, man. But hey, I suffer for the people, them. So, the show must go on, right? This is the bare, naked underbelly. This is what it looks like behind the curtain. I know y'all think it's all glamour. In show business. But no, it's not all glamour. It's not all the glamour I thought it was. There's no red carpets, no limos, no groupies. None of the stuff I thought would be in this whole AM radio industry. I don't know. So all y'all that are now aspiring to reach the pinnacle of AM radio broadcasting, let me tell you the truth about it. It is rewarding in its own way. But the glamour, it's all a lie. It's all a lie. All these AM radio hosts, especially for political talk, it's not as glamour as you think it is. No models upon which to dump expensive bottles of champagne on. Nope, no front row seats at major boxing or basketball ball chasing events. None of that. None of the stuff you thought that they tell us about show business. It's all a lie. Anyway, but it's still rewarding. I'm still very happy to be here. I just would like a cleaner keyboard, and I would like for the settings to at least on the soundboard on the Mix Wizard WZ3162 Allen and Heath mixing board. I would like for you to just, whoever, if you're listening, my fellow broadcaster, put the settings back the way you found them. Put everything back to neutral. Why I gotta go reset stuff, you know? If I change settings, and I know y'all playing music, mixing, and all the stuff y'all do, it's wonderful. I tune into the other show, it's wonderful. But, you know I don't have all the complexity. I don't have to use, out of these 5,000 buttons, I don't use three of them. Maybe 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8. Out of 500 buttons, I generally have to manipulate 8 of them. So put everything back. Dag nabbit, you know, and I don't want to be like that dude, like that meme, that dude holding the phone meme, telling. I'm not no snitch. I'm from the streets. So I'm going to bring it to you, fellow co-host, fellow broadcaster, not co-host, but other broadcasters on this station. I'm going to step to you, you know. Not really, I'm not. I'm just going to rant about it on the air as I reset everything myself. Maybe have to get here a little early. Cause I ain't trying to beef, you know. This is my crew. This is my station. You know, this is who I roll with. You gotta claim your set. This is my set. So if I'm gonna bang on anybody, I'll bang on NPR. God, I hate NPR. Anybody listen to NPR lately? NPR is disgusting. And I started listening to NPR in the late 80s, early 90s. Back when it was truly public radio, when they used to say this is non-commercial radio, where NPR's main selling point was we are not obligated to the advertisers. We don't have to say things to you and clear it through our sponsors. We could say we can represent the people because we are sponsored by the public, so we can represent the interest of the public. We're not sponsored by Monsanto. We're not sponsored by British Petroleum, BP, whatever they want to call themselves now. We are sponsored by the people, by our local community and federal grants. So that's who we speak for, the people, true democratic radio. And they had some really good shows, some really biting exposés. And they had some really good entertaining shows, like This American White. This American White. Oh, I'm sorry again. It's not This American White. It sounds This American White, but This American Life. You know, one of my favorite shows, this is from CBC, Canadian Broadcast. But Wiretap, and it has some good shows, entertaining shows, insightful shows. But now it's all like, it's just like the corporate commercial radio. And I don't know what it is. Maybe I haven't taken a sip of my tea yet. I ain't got my little, you know, green tea, organic green tea, caffeine boost. So maybe that's why I'm such a curmudgeon. But since I'm complaining, I might as well just air out all my issues before I get into the other issues. Or maybe what I have on deck to talk about today is just so soul-crushingly depressing. Maybe I'm just trying to stall for time. But I was listening to Dom DeLay, the Hammer, former majority whip coming out of our illustrious Congress, right? But anyway, he was talking a whole bunch of nonsense. He's a liar. He's an exposed criminal. He's a disgraced man. But the NPR interview, I don't know who it was. They all sound like, what's her name? Terry Gross. Every interviewer on NPR tries to sound like Terry Gross. And then go to a search engine, DuckDuckGo preferably. But if you're still on the Google machine, go to Google and look up Terry Gross and how she talks. I mean, she could be talking to Satan. And she's like, yes. Oh, wow, that is so interesting. So killing babies and bringing sin and death upon humanity. What inspired you? Like, no matter who she's talking to, she acts like she's talking to a freaking human being when she's talking to some of the most disgusting psychopaths. But all the NPR doers. So they got this Dom DeLay, the Hammer, the Republican majority whip, the corrupt, the epitome of a corrupt politician. And they're talking to this scumbag like he's not a scumbag. And so, you know, they bring up the issue of healthcare because, of course, Trump, you know, got his orange anus handed to him. Somebody, the Democrats, had to go home and soak their feet because they kicked some orange ass on the healthcare bill. Small victory for the Democrats. They needed it. They needed it. You know, so the Democrats get to parade with their little weak booty victory. They had a little weak booty. That's what we used to say in my project. Dog, that's weak booty, dog. I don't know where it came from, but just sounds appropriate. Just weak. Weak booty. Booty. So booty used to be like, oh, that's booty, that's whack. And so weak booty, I mean, it's compounding whackness. But anyway, the Democrats been taking L after L. But, you know, they got to kick. They had to go soak their feet because they had orange residue on the tips of their toes because they kicked some orange butt. But anyway, they had Dom DeLay. They went and dug up some random, obscure, corrupt Republican to talk about this. And so anyway, it was a stupid interview. I don't encourage you to listen to it. But if you don't believe me about how they can listen to someone who is disgraced and I treat them like they're a statesman, like they're somebody who's worthy of respect, they would say, they ask him about healthcare, and he said, I don't think healthcare is a right. Healthcare is a responsibility. I mean, just saying some dumb stuff. And they didn't ask him to back up anything. Then Dom DeLay started going against single-payer health care. That's not going to work. It's such a backward system. It's a pipe dream. And she was like, oh, really? Thanks for letting us know. She didn't challenge him on anything. She didn't step to him like, what the hell do you mean a right versus a responsibility? So what about, the government regulates, at least up until yesterday, the government used to take responsibility for clean air. And is clean air a responsibility, not a right? If your health is your own responsibility, do we have to filter our own water? What about automobile regulations? Should multinational corporations be able to create products that will explode in our faces without any regulation? And then on top of that, without any oversight? And if a multi-billion dollar corporation, if Apple Corp sells you a product that poisons or kills you, should you personally have to take your $1.50 in savings? Should you have to drive down to your local payday loan to get $350 to hire some janky lawyer and sue Apple Corp on your own as opposed to going through a class action lawsuit? As opposed to the federal government and regulatory agencies on your behalf, taking our collective resources and suing the multinational. So it's a person. What's this response? And the Republicans are the most. I mean, I asked you. You tell me. Tell me one thing that elite white men have taken personal responsibility for. Like I said, Trump just got his orange ass kicked. He has a white orange footprint on the. And like, if you look at his wide ass, there's a white footprint there. From where they kicked the orange dust off of his ass. Did he take personal responsibility for the loss? Did he say, yay, I put forth an ill-conceived plan. I've been fronting about how, you know, I threatened. I did everything I could do, but I lost that, y'all. I didn't know. I take that L. He's like, nope. Oh, now you're going to suffer. You know, but just Only poor, broke people ever go for that personal responsibility okie doke. Only poor, broke down people who've been told they ain't nothing, ain't never going to be nothing. You know, we're all like, we shouldn't even call ourselves the poor or lower class or even middle class. We the Miss Sealy class. We all Sealys. Every now and then we'll go to the polls and everything you do, I'm not going to vote for you. Every now and then we'll get our little courage up, but mostly we just take it. We little mealy mouth and just take the abuse. While the hypocrites are like, you know, what's his name? Misters. The elites are misters. Maybe if we put it in that context, we can get a class warfare. We can get people to rise up. Because putting it in political terms, you know, going through all this Marxist analysis is too much. Just put it in that terms. Do you want to be a Sealy? Eventually, Sealy class, you got to go after the Mr. class. Trump is from the Mr. class. The 1%, the elites, they're henchmen. They the Mr. class. They tell us we ain't nothing. They tell us we're unworthy. They tell us what little crumbs they give us, which is the crumbs from the cake that we baked. Maybe, just maybe, if we maybe start doing, forget Marxist analysis. Forget Noam Chomsky. Forget all these brainy people. Forget Fanon. Forget that. We need to start using terms like the Sealy class. It's time for us to take them crooked fingers and point them in the face of the global Mr. elites. The 1%, no, that's a percentage. That's number. That math. Leave that alone. Say the Mr. class, the Mr. groups, and tell them, everything you do. We need to come at these people because they don't take personal responsibility for nothing. But they're going to come to us talk about healthcare is our responsibility. I'm supposed to take a syringe and a scalpel to my son. You know, and a large percentage of diseases are what? What are they? They're communicable. They can spread amongst other people. So it ain't nothing personal. You got meningitis. Ain't nothing personal about that. Damn bubonic plague wiped out 1/3 of Europe. You think Europeans, Western culture would be the most pro-social? Well, actually, let me not say yes. After having, you know, more than any other national, racial, cultural, historical group, Europeans have suffered more from mass disease because of their practices. They tend to like to wallow in their own filth. Don't blame me. There's a wonderful book called Dirt. It's really hard to get, but it's basically the history of filth, you know, in Western Europe. How their long and storied path from, you know, living in homes and putting pig sties above their house. For some reason, they were like, well, don't want anybody to steal our pigs, so let's store our pigs above our homes. You know, put the pigs in the attic and the cows in the basement, and we'll live in the middle. It's crazy. But anyway, they were like, hey, how about we keep the pigs outside? And soon, hopefully, they'll figure out, let's not just keep the pigs at all. Let them be wild boars and go off. Stop eating them all together. But baby steps, baby savage steps, cave steps. I don't know. That's not my point. But you go to most Western European countries, they have figured it out. Ain't nothing individual, personal about disease, chronic disease, acute disease, or injuries. There are social, community-wide, and even nationwide ramifications when people are not treated for persistent ailments, when people are not sustained in health. You know, it weakens the society because we are all interdependent and interconnected. So most Europeans, but the United Statesians haven't figured it out. Americans, the Americans, not, you know, when you say Americans, it ain't got nothing to do with Panama, Brazil, Latin America, Canada. You can skip Canada and get to Australia, you know, in their image of America. But anyway, and all that to say, NPR is full of crap. Yeah, I'm trying to start a spark talk radio wars. Am I doing it because I think I'm a principled person? And I think that anybody who's given the blessing, the opportunity, the right to speak to other people, to broadcast their thoughts, their views to the airways, they owe a responsibility to make sure their views, if not well articulated, are at least accurate. So am I trying to start talk radio wars for that reason? Or am I just trying to do it to boost ratings? Am I like on some Soulja Boy stuff, or am I really truly principled? Am I beefing for beef's sake? Only you be the judge. You be the judge. Y'all gonna judge me anyway. I ain't like I ain't even got to tell you. Anyway, the phone lines are open here. 312-985-7834. And you know, the phone lines were blowing up when I had the debate last Saturday with the end time scribe. a black Hebrew Israelite. One of my favorite debates. I like debates where the person you're debating pretty much does your side of your job for you, because they take your point, your assertion, your conclusion, and pretty much puts on a Broadway theatrical play demonstrating what you were trying to say. Because my basic point was, one of the many anti-black black religions was black Hebrewism. And he got on there and said a lot of horrible anti-black things. So, point proven. Diallo, one. Hebrew Israelites, zero in this ongoing ideological conflict. So, AM 1680 again. The phone lines are always open to you if you are so inclined to call. 312-985-7834. If you want to rehash old stuff or bring in some new stuff, it's on you. Anyway, Trump, like I said, got his big wide orange butt kicked on healthcare. And what does the man baby do? Oh, first of all, let's sip a little bit of tea first before I get into this, because this is so miserable. This makes me so sad. And I'm sad because, like I said, Big Daddy Kane, nice and smooth, Snoop Doggy the dog, Bishop Don Manager Juan, all these people, if they have taught us nothing, they told us that pimping ain't easy. Pimping is not supposed to be easy. But the Mr. Class, the global elites, we make pimping so easy for them. They put on some sparkly show, they put some blonde-haired white woman in front of a teleprompter, and we just all fall to pieces. And we go out and regurgitate what the TV say to us, to other people, as if it's our own thought. We make pimping so easy for the elites. And I ain't saying we can stop them from pimping us, but we got to stop making it easy. They ain't even got to put the pimp hand on us. We put the pimp hand on ourselves. It's like the hoes are out in the street just beating each other up on behalf of the pimp. We fighting each other over the crumbs. So if you're not going to stop the global elite from pimping us, pimping the ecosystem, turning our children into human resources, at least make it difficult for them. But anyway, I'm going to sip some tea before I get into this. Kind of bitter this morning. Everything's so bitter. Everything has a brown tinge. Anyway, you know what I love about my listeners? They'll ask me a question, and if I don't respond in 10 seconds, they'll post a link to the answer to the question they asked me. Okay, Nicole, I guess you answered the question you asked me before I could get back to you. Thank you very much. And then I'll share it on my blog. Anyway, but Nicole did tell me start providing links and stuff to stuff I say. I can't really do that in real time. Maybe if King Dieter was here, my co-host, man, the worst co-host in the world, I'm going to go ahead and give him that title. I'm going to go to the BET and Source Award and see if they will get a talk radio category. And part of that category, worst co-host. Because why? Look next to me. Ain't nobody here. What kind of co-host is that? But he's co-hosting in spirit. He called me yesterday, and we talk down and clown everybody we can, which gives me content and inspiration to come in here. So he's such a wonderful co-host. He can co-host in absent. He like Trump. He may be in Mar-a-Lago. Where do poor people go? What's the poor Mar-a-Lago? Anyway, let me sip a little bit of more bitter green tea. I'm going to talk about some petty gossip that ain't even that relevant to us. And then I'm going to get into the real meat and potatoes, which is I'm going to talk about everybody's hooping and hollering. Oh, I'm just going to talk about when I talk about it. I ain't even going to project it. But there was a recent report that Trump, we already know Trump and Melania don't sleep together, because Melania is in Trump Tower in New York City to the tune of what? Almost $500,000 a day. What is she costing us to keep her and little inbred Barron? And people get upset when I say that Barron's inbred. But Trump is a eugenicist. And so these people don't find the love of their lives. These people don't fall in love and decide to let's procreate and make life together. Eugenicists, they breed human beings. They breed themselves and they try to breed other people. So they don't find somebody to fall in love with and procreate. They select. They select. And what they want to do is preserve racial characteristics. And so since they want to preserve, and Trump said this, he said that my intelligence, my brilliance, my strength, my ability to influence the world came as a result of my Germanic lineage. I didn't learn how to be so brilliant in school, how to use, you know, one syllable words throughout an entire speech. Good, bad, ugly, sad. All that brilliance came from his breeding stock. It had nothing to do with his education, socialization, being at the high, up high on the economic hierarchy, having a society that's pretty much oriented because you're a white man. You know, it came from his breeding stock. So, of course, what do you do? You want to, if you don't take a pit bull and breed it with a border collie, you have to inbreed it with other pit bulls. So he goes to Eastern Europe. I guess that's where he thinks the best breeding stock is. And he finds somebody that has the most common overlapping characteristics. So if you're a eugenicist, your offspring are inbred. You don't just inbreed with your cousin. So that's the thing. Inbreeding. So his little inbred son, his genetically bred, altered, and selected wife, she lives all the way in New York City. With full Secret Service. And let me tell you something. That tower, because I live in Chicago, not far from the Obama mansion. And even though Obama ain't president, they still got the damn barricades up. They still got Secret Service guarding that empty house. And now he's got a mansion. He's balling out in D.C. lobbying for the same interest that he worked for. I know the book is $5,000. I said it's a rare book. What do you want from me? I don't set the price. I'm arguing with this woman. Like, she my wife. And hey, lady, I didn't set the price. Okay, Nicole, relax. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, right. And Trump is in D.C. And every weekend he flies down to Mar-a-Lago. So every weekend, just $3,000 on that trip for entourage, security, preparation, woo, woo, woo. But anyway, it was stated that even when they live together, in their Manhattan million-dollar condo, they never shared a bed. They never shared a bed. Which is, you know, very telling. Very telling. I'm going to let you take it, but, you know, people sleep in it. And it wasn't no, like, Leave It to Beaver, Dick Van Dyke, when they have twin bed in separate rooms. They lived in opposite wings of the house. And they're about to come out with Baba Keaton used to always talk about this movie called The Handmaiden's Tale, because he said in The Handmaiden's Tale, the only black people in that movie, The Handmaid's Tale, was they loaded up all the blacks and other non-white people onto the back of a truck and drove them off into the sunset, never to be seen or heard from again. That was the most telling part of the movie. Other than that, it's this dystopian thing, like if when Trump's fully rule the world. When Trump's fully ruled the world. But in that thing, they would select women to breed and to. But anyway, Trump is already on some Handmaid's Tale dystopian future dictatorship stuff. He's already living that. He was living that before he was elected. Creepy stuff, man. Creepy, creepy stuff. But Trump likes bodily fluids in the bed for some reason. So maybe Melania, after she does her business, maybe he sleeps in the bathroom. She comes in there, does her due. He gets off, and then she goes back to her sector of the house and locks the door behind her, you know. And Trump is very, you know, he's a freaking weirdo, man. But anyway, everybody, okay, I'm done. But Trump wants to get revenge on people, on the world, for not taking his stupid 16-page health care plan. You know, they bragged about how short the health care plan. The national health care for almost a half a billion people, they were like, well, it's a page and a half. And the other half page, the full page is a coloring page. You know, they had like 7 pages in the health care bill that were strictly related to denying health care to lottery winners. They took them 7 pages to hash, suss that out. But anyway, it was a stupid plan. And then, you know, the nonpartisan accounting, federal accounting and budget office basically said, you know, this is projected. Yes, it's going to save money. It's going to save billions of dollars. But all that billions of dollars in savings is going to not be redistributed to the public, not be put in the coffers of the government to be spent on public interest. It's going to go into the pockets of the multinational corporations, mainly pharmaceutical and private insurance companies. It's also 24 million people were slated to lose their benefits. They said the worst thing about Obama was the mandate saying you must buy, but they removed the mandate, but they not only maintained, because if the mandate means if you don't have insurance, you will be penalized. So you're not mandated to buy insurance, but if you don't have coverage, they stated that you still would be penalized. If you went more than 6 months in any year without, was it 6 months? It's so crazy. But anyway, if you allow your health care coverage to lapse more than 6 months, then you would receive a penalty. You weren't mandated to get insurance or to have insurance or even secure insurance after 6 months. But if you did, it would be a $3,000 to $6,000, not tax, but penalty, right? And so that penalty would not go like it did in Obamacare into the insurance pool to pay for health care for everyone else. That money would go directly to the insurance company, all in private hands, go to the profits of the billionaire insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies, right? So it's no longer saying, it's like God, you know, because these are all Christian, good Christian people trying to take your health care. These are good Christian people. So it's like God. Like, some gods will say, do as I say, or I will strike you dead. Whereas God is like the Republicans' health care bill, American Health Act, AHA, as opposed to the Affordable Care Act, ACA. And, you know, the acronym of the Republican bill was AHA. I gotcha. What do you say when you say AHA? But they say, basically, God is like, do whatever you want. Do your thing. Go on, girl. Do your thing. Do whatever you want. Do what you like. Humpty Humpty dance. Do what you like. But I'm going to burn your ass for eternity on the other end of this. But it's your choice. Do what you want. You have free will. Burn. Yeah, but don't worry about the burning. Do you. You a big man. You the man. You can do what you want. You human, right? You bigger than me. You don't have to love your creator. You don't have to serve your creator. You don't have to give me 10% of your pre-tax income to your career. Don't do none of that, do you? You have free will. I'm like, oh, thanks, God, but you're going to burn. Weeping, wailing, moaning, gnashing of teeth, hellfire, raped by demons. Like, that's not no choice. So basically, they got a mandate. That's not, they say it's not a mandate. That's semantics. It's a penalty. The mandate is only a problem because it's a penalty. Because if Obama was like, I demand that you secure health care. I demand it. It's not an option here. I demand it. And if I don't, then I will be saddened if you don't. So a mandate without penalty is nothing. But a penalty without a mandate is still bad. Either way, you're worse than Obama because your penalties will cost you more. The penalties will cost you more. So, but anyway, it was crappy hell. I mean, it's like they didn't want it to pass. And then Trump, what they have this thing called political capital in our government, meaning your clout, how much pull you got, just off of your word. You know, it's like Jay-Z said, his presence is charity. It's so with Trump, his word is bond, like his word. So he said to the Republicans, y'all line up behind this bill. Me and Paul Ryan sat down and wrote this bill, which is right. Oh, Trump ain't never wrote a damn word. No, and Trump is, I don't think Trump is fully literate, you know. But, I mean, you ain't got to be white skin and born rich. What else you need in life in this racist, patriarchal world? White and male. He said, and rich. But anyway, he said, you know, we got this bill, and I'm going to tell you, if you guys go against this bill, you won't be reelected. And I'll shut down your any type of federal aid to your districts. This all is threatening. You know, you see that really popular hysterical Hitler meme where Hitler's banging on the table, Now, Hitler, his empire is crumbling all around him. He's hiding in a bunker. He can't go outside because his ass will get popped. He's out of options. You know, the Russians are coming from the east. The British and the Americans are racing toward the west. The Luftwaffe, the Reich is burning. The Luftwaffe is in retreat. Blitzkrieg is done. And he's standing there around his generals banging on the table, issuing orders, do this, do that. I'm like, man, and everybody's standing there like, oh, like this man, like his word means anything, when they should have been hightailing it out of there, which a lot of them did. Again, go look up Operation Paperclip. The boys are from Brazil. A lot of Nazis came to America under Operation Paperclip, Oppenheimer, the U.S. missile program. You know, another hidden figures, half of the hidden figures were black men and women, really, working to help get Whitey on the moon. The other half of hidden figures were the damn Nazi scientists and engineers. Now it's time to tell that side of the story. That's why it ain't nothing to dance and hoop and holler about. Look how well I served the master. Look what good I did for the master. I quadrupled my cotton quota on this here plantation. I mean, I just don't. There were a lot of Jews. Hitler, another book you can go look up for us, Nicole. I think this is more reasonably priced. Hitler's Jewish Soldiers. There were a lot of Jews that were members of the Third Reich, that were members of the SS, the Luftwaffe. One of Hitler's, Hitler was a germaphobe and a hemophiliac. He always thought he was dying of some disease or the next. And some of the best doctors and researchers in Germany were Jews. So he just said, okay, I can't gas this dude. I need him for my own personal benefit. So I will just bestow upon him honorary Aryan and let him work for me. But guess, yeah, everybody has traitors, but not everybody celebrates their traitors. And I ain't even saying the hidden figures ladies are traitors, but I'm just not sure what. I mean, did they bring some of that mathematical genius back to the hood? I don't know. But they helped get Whitey on the moon. Right done bit my sister Nell, Whitey's on the moon. Her arm and leg begin to swell, and Whitey's on the moon. I can't pay my doctor bills because Whitey's on the moon. 10 years from now, I'll be paying still because Whitey's on the moon. Taxes taking my whole damn check. Junkies got me a nervous wreck. The price of food is going up. And if all that stuff ain't enough, a rat done bit my sister Nell, and Whitey's on the moon. Her arms and legs begin to swell, and Whitey's on the moon. Well, you can tell your sister Nell, Gil Scott-Heron, that black women helped to get Whitey on the moon. So that would maybe, I don't know what it does for the rat bite, but her pride will swell as big as her rat bite. As her arms and legs. I don't know. But hey, I'm a hater. So anyway, Trump gets his butt kicked. He gets publicly humiliated. Has his own party. And remember, he makes the best deals. The art of the deal. He makes the best deals. He negotiates. Because everything Trump has been up to that point has been executive orders. And even his executive, his number one key legislation, this is the first time, because that's another thing people don't understand. When Trump says, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, I'm going to do this, Trump can't really do much but do what's already been allowed for him to do. The executive branch of the federal government does not legislate. They do not create laws. And another thing they don't do, they don't create laws, and they can't end laws. That means they can't render laws null and void. If a law is established, then they can't say, well, this law is null and void. Only the Supreme Court can do that, deem it unconstitutional. Or the Congress can do it, but it's much harder for the Congress, for 500 Congress people than 9 judges, to render a law null and void. And Congress doesn't like to render laws null and void because they're the ones that write the law, so they're stupid. So Congress writes the laws. The president does not have the capacity to legislate. And another thing, the president does not have capacity, doesn't have control of the budget. He doesn't write the budget. Now, the president, every president, this is just tradition. They will write down their budget priorities and what they think, and they send it to the Congress. And the Congress takes that bill and dumps it into the nearest wastebasket. This is not your job. Because if a president wrote laws and allocated funds, you know, the Congress appropriates. So if the president wrote laws, he'd be taking the Congress jobs. Now, they'll let Mexicans or whatever, they'll let your jobs get took. or led to believe Mexicans take our jobs. Oh, my God. That's the dumbest thing I ever heard. Dumbest thing. But anyway, they'll let your jobs get shipped overseas or automated. They're not going to automate. Then you can't take a congressman's job. And you can't take a congressman's health care. And you can't pay a Congress less than a living wage. Now, for the rest of y'all citizens, you underlings, hell, run for Congress. You want job stability, health care, and benefits after you're out of work? You want to retire after 2 to 6 years of work for a lifetime benefits of health care? Then run for Congress. Everybody should just run for Congress for 2-year terms and then step down and let the next person. And in a few generations, we'll all have single-payer health care. Congress don't do nothing anyway. Because our legislation is all written by multinational corporations. In this legalized bribery system we call lobbying and donations. But that's another topic. So Trump got his butt kicked. Trump showed that he doesn't have the clout and power and influence over his own party. He demonstrated that the art of the deal, which he did not write. And the guy who wrote the art of the deal, I have to look that up. But he didn't write the art of the deal. He's not a great negotiator. He lied about that. I'm the greatest negotiator. He's a good hustler, though. I'm a great hustler. I can get you all worked up. But, you know, I seldom follow through. Just ask Melania. That's why she sleeps in the separate room. He can get you hot and bothered, but he'll never deliver. So he's mad. Trump is mad. He's embarrassed. You know his ego, his fragile little orange ego. His little bitty tiny hands that represent another little tiny part of his face just so clenched so tight. It's like that Arthur meme with when they were like, they didn't vote, but he didn't lose. I didn't lose because we rescinded. We repealed the bill. We's like, hey, take it off the flow. Get it off the flow. Get it. He got it off the flow, pulled it back, and said, we didn't vote on it. So how can I lose if I didn't vote, huh? Chinese riddle for you. It's like that other meme, the Nigerian student that with his finger to his head, he's like, yo. How can your bill be voted down when it was repealed from the floor of the Congress? Huh? Trump doesn't lose. He just runs like a little biatch. So he ran. He ran back to the White House. Paul Ryan ran back to the ran and hid behind his little gavel. That's the congressional majority leader. They all scattered. They took their little funky ass bill and ran. Obama kicked their asses. From the grave, from the political grave, Obama rose up and was like, ACA, which sucks. The ACA sucks. Obama didn't run on up, back it on up. Let me not even get there. I ain't even going to get into how horrible the ACA, because this is the trick. They got us fighting for bad stuff to avoid horrible stuff. They got us celebrating bad stuff because we think the bad stuff has rescued us from the horrible stuff. That's all you got. Well, let's keep it bad. Let's not allow it to go horrible. Let's just sustain bad. That's what it is. You know. It's really that. And I'm not even joking. It's like they're making you choose. Do you want a rapist who uses a condom or a rapist who doesn't use a condom? That's your only choice. But you're going to get raped. You're going to get screwed. You're going to be assaulted. And we're so screwed up that we're cheering when we say, hey, yay, we got the rapist with the condom. Yay. All right, a victory for the common man. I'm calling you Sealy class. Come on, people. The maintenance of the Affordable Care Act is not a victory for the people. So anyway, that's not even what I'm talking about. That's the setup for what I'm talking about. So Trump is mad. And then what does the white class do? Because they got an army of Negroes all through the hood. The white people have a trained, indoctrinated army of new Negroes, of Uncle Toms, of Sambo sellouts, who run around the hood talking about personal responsibility. You got to take personal responsibility for your actions. You got to take personal. Bill Cosby was their patron saint, which is funny. I know this is a rabbit hole, but this is kind of funny. You notice that Bill Cosby, who hated black people, by the way, yeah, no love for y'all. The black person he hates most, of course, is his wife, Camille Cosby. After his wife and Camille Cosby, the black people he hated after that was his black children. And then after those two, we were number three. The masses of black people were number three. Bill Cosby hated us almost as much as Michael Jackson hated us. But we have this funny habit of loving Negroes who hate us. I don't know where we got that habit from. Michael Jackson hates black people. Hated black people. But hey, all your actions, all your money, all your the causes that, you know, black kids were starving. He's saying we are the world, and not a dime went to Ethiopia. European music producers got more money from We Are the World than their starving children in North Africa. But we love black people who hate us. I'm going to try this. Next week, I'm going to spend the whole time hating black people. See how much love I get. You know, but oh, it's already a dude. I ain't even got to do that experiment because Sotomayor. Black men made him into a household name. Brother Polite. Let me think of some sisters, because brothers are mostly responsible for those clowns. Let me think of some. Who y'all? Who hate us that black women love? I don't know. I'll find out. Got to keep it fair and balanced. But anyway, we have a habit. But anyway, Bill Cosby was the patron saint of the Negroes, of the good, polished Negroes, the ones that spoke standard English, who wore their pants, who didn't sag their pants, in fact, wore their pants 2 inches above their belly buttons, who had them corny-ass miniature, like, buzz cuts, and after they wore those funny hairstyles. Those black women who would go to white hairstylists because they were sophisticated would go to Mario Tricoshi and places like that to get their hair done. So you got black hair, white hairstylists. So even though they spend a lot of money on their hair, their perms look thirsty, and they wear those power business suits, and they stand shoulder to shoulder with Hillary Clinton. You know, the good Negroes, the well-trained, the well-seasoned Negroes. They loved Bill Cosby. But when white folks turned on Cosby, like the rabid viper, yes, rabid viper. Who knew snakes can get rabies? They really can't. But you know how despicable you have to be a viper with rabies, because snakes can't even get rabies. But anyway, when they turned on Cosby like a viper with rabies, the upper-class Negroes, the Morehouse Spelman, Coward University, the articulate Negroes who take personal responsibility for their actions, they abandoned Bill Cosby. They all backed away from him, you know, because they couldn't go to their white cocktail parties, their white, mostly white neighborhoods, their mostly white bake sales, their mostly white churches, and in their like, being the good black person in the mostly white world and boost Bill Cosby. Now, they could, when Cosby was talking about how bad black folks was, they'd be like, yes, just like Bill Cosby. He's one of my personal mentors. He's one of my favorite. Oh, I love the Cosby Show. It was such a positive representation. I didn't never like the doggone Cosby Show. Give me some good times. Give me some what's happening. But I ain't polished. But the polished Negroes, right? But then what's weirder about that is the black nationalists, the Gullah Gullahs, the kind of black people that Bill Cosby spent almost his entire public career condemning, they embraced Cosby. Because they really thought him, all these white women, oh, he was banging on the beast. I don't know. They thought maybe it was some kind of payback. Rape white women for the century. Somehow that would make the black women whole, the centuries of black women. I don't know. That's what some of them said. They're like, oh, he raped white women. So it ain't that he did, you know, such a horrible thing. Because whitey done raped our people, you know. Sick, real twisted logic. They are not our teachers. But anyway, the black nationalists. Bill Cosby was going to buy NBC. And now everybody kind of, a lot of the black, they used to, I know that's a joke and that's a meme now, but that's seriously what they used to say. They used to be, it wasn't a joke. Back in the 90s, it wasn't a joke. They said that Bill Cosby's son, I've even said this way back then. I'm like, you know, people said that Bill Cosby's son was murdered to send him a message not to buy. But when you really think about it, what he advocates, Bill Cosby buying NBC would have been a catastrophe for black people. It's Nigga Hate Channel. NHTV. Nigga Hate. Hate Niggas. HNTV. IHN. I Hate Niggas TV. So if anybody should have set Bill Cosby up for a downfall, it should have been black folks if we had any damn sense, but we don't. We love black people who hate us, who show nothing but utter contempt for their own blackness and for all the rest of our blackness, and show nothing but love for our oppressors. This is weird. So Bill Cosby got abandoned by the class he helped to create, that he gave millions of dollars to Negro institutions to churn out Negro after Negro year after year. Bill Cosby went to the Negro factories and gave them all of the inputs that they needed. And they were like, oh, we should cherish Bill Cosby. He went to the Negro factories to help the Negro factories more effectively, more efficiently produce more Negroes. But then after they got a, well, Whitey don't like you, so I gotta hate you. If Whitey love you, then I'll love you more. If Whitey hate you, I'll hate you more. That's the code of being an Uncle Tom. But then the black nationalists, even to this day, they're still black nationalists who really think that the white man, I mean, why would the white man conspire? I mean, white people of the higher ups. I understand other people. They want to get a payday and all that. Janice Dickinson, I understand that. But why would the Illuminati, reptilian overlords, Masonic rituals, you know, type people, globe holders, why would the globe holders conspire to take down one of their own assets even while he was still working on their behalf and in their interest? It doesn't make sense, but it don't matter. Because did he hate us? Yes, then we love him. Case closed. But anyway, back to personal responsibility. White men never take, but I mean, but you notice another thing. A lot of these Negro Uncle Tom sellouts have really backed off a lot of their admonitions. Yes, it's another word I've invented. I can invent my own vocabulary. Trump does it. So a lot of them who would admonish us to take personal responsibility. And we talk about how irresponsible black people are. How we don't, we squander our money. And we spend too much time doing dancing and nonsense. And if we would just do the right thing, the white man would do right by us as soon as we get figure out how to do right by ourselves. All that stuff. Blaming us. Blaming victims. Attacking poor people who have no real power. And no social problem has ever been created by people with no power. All social problems, all societal problems are created by people with power and influence. The best poor people can do, the best thing, the best powerless people can do, they can create problems in their home, with their spouses, with their extended family. They can maybe harass a block, maybe two square, three square blocks. They can make trouble. But on a society level, on a systemic level, powerless people don't have systemic power. Therefore, they can't influence systemic power one way or another. I'm sorry. And the only way for powerless people to do that is for them to unite. But powerless people, only way they can do that is to be revolutionized. And the only way they can be revolutionized is to abandon what they call caste behavior. They have to stop being the masses and become the vanguard. So it's all an evolutionary or de-evolutionary process. So if you are following a black leader or you're listening to somebody like Polite that looks at the poor, look at the disenfranchised, look at the wretched of the earth and say, you're the problem. You know those people, number one, don't understand the problem. Number two, they have no intent to try to address the problem. At best, they are trying to profit from the suffering. That's what the best they do. So unless you're looking up, the problems come from on high. Trickle down, like trickle down economics, it's trickle down social ills and social dysfunction. They create the problem. Now, they're to blame. But we're responsible to fix it. But the way we fix it is not by telling black people, poor blacks, to act like upper class, nose up in the air, sadiddy, snooty Negroes. We tell them you have to become revolutionary. And you can't be revolutionary but gangster. Gangsterism is a purely reactionary. It's a reactionary stance. It's a reactionary collective. Gangsterism is reactionary. So you can't be revolutionary. And I know black men love that gangster aesthetic, the swagger. It makes us feel tough. It makes us feel manly that we lack any type of institutional power. We are very dwarfed in resources by our oppressors and other men. We see other men doing things and we can't do those big things. So we just say, okay, we want to have the tough, we want to be machismo and beat our chest. But you know, that's not manhood, y'all. Sorry. Sorry. Especially it's not African manhood. But back to Trump. Trump took a L. Trump got his butt kicked on a global stage. Trump is mocked by all the liberals. The Democrats finally got a win after taking big L's, and Trump, because he's such an idiot, because he makes these big, absurd claims, big, contradictory, stupid claims, and because his followers, his supporters are as stupid as Obama's supporter was, they were as blind in their support of him as Obama was, right? So his claim falls flat on its face. And does Trump stand before the stage and say, hey, I made a mistake, y'all, and I've learned from this mistake. I've learned the democratic process. I've learned that I'm not an autocrat, I'm not a tyrant, I'm not a dictator, so I'm going to listen to the will of the people. I'm going to learn from this humbling mistake. I want to thank the Congress. Hell to the no, to the no, no, no. He's like, I'm going to destroy the climate. I'm going to burn the world. The world will burn as I play a fiddle at Mar-a-Lago. I can't even play the fiddle. I'll hire someone to play the fiddle for me as the world burns. That's what he did. And he's like, I have to get people to stop thinking about this ass whooping, this orange ass whooping that I just took. So I'm just going to sign another big piece of legislation, have another spectacle, line up some miners, and talk a bunch of nonsense, jibber jabber, winning, winning, jobs, jobs, win, win, jobs. And now nobody's talking about the healthcare bill. That's the old news cycle, you know, short attention spans. So when I come back, I'm going to talk about this. First thing I want to talk about when I come back is everybody's like, Obama, oh God, Trump is repealing Obama's healthcare plan. First of all, and this is the best, and I'm honest, I looked it up. I studied it intensely. I even looked at all those boring numbers about gigatons of carbon. And Obama was not a good environmental president. Obama is a hustler. Like I said, Obama was the rapist who would wear a condom. Trump is the rapist who refuses to use a condom. Obama, at best, if the best thing I could say about Obama's climate policies is that they were anemic and they were symbolic. Obama acknowledged the problems and did next to nothing to truly address it. Trump denies the problem and does everything to exacerbate it. So I guess being sold a pipe dream and given non-solution is better than being told a blatant lie and then somebody trying to exacerbate or make the problem worse. I don't know. I say middle finger to both of them on the environment, on the ecosystem, on the issue of climate change and global warming. They were both give F's for me. You know. So I would give Obama an F on the climate and make him go back to his seat. I would give Trump an F and make him go sit in the corner with a dunce cap on. That's the only difference. They were both bad on the climate. But now we got people celebrating. Oh, poor. We're going to lose Obama's climate. Let's go. I want to take my music break. I don't want to miss out on the music because I had a secret. My music selection technique is most often songs that are stuck in my head. You know, that's my main thing. So, oh my goodness, I can't find it. But anyway, let's break for music. I have to find it. So I'm gonna pay the intro music for a second while I find, because I navigated away from what I was looking for. What am I look for? Then I go see. But I'll be back. So anyway, this is the Bro Diallo Show, AM 1680, March 29th, Year of Your Lord, 2017. Thanks for tuning in. When we come back, I'm going to tell you how Trump symbolic environmental destruction is just as symbolic as Obama's environmentalism rescue of the environment. They both suck.
I don't smoke cigarettes, cause it will stop I breath. Yes, yeah. I'm a don't sniff coke, cause it will make I choke. All I smoke is the real cushion pain. Cushion pain make I count from 1 till 10. Pass the cushion pain, pass it over. Boy, so pass the cushion pain, pass it over. Oh, I went undercover just to find my lover. In the kitchen she frying chicken, meanwhile me have my cushion pain. So pass the cushion pain, pass it over. Oh yeah, pass the cushion pain, pass it over. See, in the town it's a dollar a stick, in the country it's 50 cents. Me and the brethren sit down on that tree, roll to spliff and eat some food, eh. Pass the cushion pain, pass it over. One day, yeah.
tu cushion pen, pass it over. See, oh wait, oh wait, oh wait, oh wait. See, Canadian people love to smoke cushion pen. When they smoke cushion pen, they have to smoke it again. The London people love to smoke cushion pen. When they smoke cushion pen, they have to smoke it again. So pass the cushion pen, pass it over. Pass it over. Hey. I'm on those smoke cigarettes, cause it will stop my breath. Ooh, yeah, yeah. I'm on those sniff coke, cause it will make a joke. All I smoke is the real cushion pain. Cushion pain make I call from 1 till 10. Pass the cushion pain, pass it over. Pass the cushion pain. Pass it over. See, gone undercover just to find my sexy lover. She's in the kitchen toasting bread and frying chicken. So pass the cushion pang, just pass it over. Oh, hey, pass the cushion pang, pass it over. Hey, pass the cushion pang. Pass it over, oh, see, pass the cushion bang, pass it over.
Why you never run because you have photo on your face and you're acting like woman.
All right. Frankie Paul. Dem a run down tall. Frankie Paul. Dem a rule dem a. That was Frankie Paul. Tashung Pin. I wanted the other version of Tashung Pin. If this world were mine, I'd play rubber dub all the time. But I can't find that, so I'll play that some other time. But the Frankie Paul version is a good constellation. And then, my main man, I love Prince Jazzbo. And his diss track. Yeah, y'all thought hip-hop invented diss tracks. Nope. The Talkers, the Chatters, the Rude Boys was battling on wax long before the rappers. That was a diss track. Jazzbo. Apparently, iRoy said that Prince Jazzbo was very, very ugly. But Prince Jazzbo said, if I know ugly, you couldn't call my name in your song to get promotion. Banana act like gal. Yeah, gal out there, chai boy. Man, I love that song. Sorry. They don't know if you a man or you a woman. They don't know. Gal out there. So anyway, I'm sorry. My spirits are lifted, in case you want to know. But even though I'm a big fan of iRoy, shout out to iRoy. I'm sorry if I find your... I know you had a response track. Well, you dissed him first. You Prince... iRoy dissed Prince Jazzbo first, so this is a retaliation. So maybe I'll find the follow-up track. Who knows? It's much better beef saga than Nicki. I mean, I put it up there with Boogie Down Productions versus Juice Crew. But one of my favorites diss track is Common going in on WC, Mac 10, and Ice Cube. But anyway, I feel better. See, all I have to do is listen to other people tearing other people down, and it makes me feel better. All right? Call it what you will. But let's talk about Obama. Everybody's in tears. Everybody's trembling. Everybody's like, Trump is going to kill the world. Trump is going to take away all the progress we made under Obama. And if you want to call in and defend your president, because my first black president was His Majesty Kwame Nkrumah of Ghana. That's my first black president. And can't nobody be first before him. I don't care. I'm pan-African. So African leaders will be my leaders. I will claim them. I am an African diaspora. So my first black president had come decades before your first black president. And so, but anyway, people are like, oh, Obama did all this wonder. See, the bottom line, the fundamental issue with global warming. Now, there's a lot of issues with ecosystems collapse, contamination of water, air, and soil, all that. But the number one thing that's going to kill us all, the true Armageddon. Armageddon is not supernatural. It's not prophesied. It's scientific, actually. Is the release of carbon into the atmosphere. And carbon stays up there for millennia, and it traps greenhouse gases, causing the Earth's temperatures to warm. A warmer planet is a supercharged planet. Heat is energy. And so storms are more intense, environmental disparities. The hot places get hotter. The cold places disappear, if not get intensely cold. There's no consistency. There's no climate stability. It's like capitalism, supercharged accumulation of heat. And hot air holds more water. So you have more moisture in the atmosphere, more storms, more torrential rains. So you'll have droughts, severe droughts. And when the rain does come, it's not rain that nourishes the land, but rain that causes severe mudslides, slides and erosions. And that's the bottom line, the number one key factor in all of that. The real extinction level event is accumulation of carbon in the atmosphere. 350.org said that we have to keep carbon at 300 parts per million in the atmosphere. And we're beyond 400 parts per million. So not only do we need to stop emitting carbon, we need to do what they call carbon sequestration in order to make the Earth continually be habited by humans and other complex life forms. And so Obama took office in 2008. And in 2008, there was 8.740 gigatons of carbon emitted when he walked into office. Can't really hold that against him. But then, guess what? This wonderful thing. In 2009, there were only 8.700 gigatons of carbon emitted into the atmosphere. Right? And that was a reduction by 40 points. Now, had nothing to do with Obama's policy. If you will remember, if you're old enough, between 2008 and 2009, there was a severe economic downturn. They call it the Great Recession. They don't want to call things the Great Depression anymore because that's a downer. It's just not good branding, right? So Obama, in his first year in office, not even his first full year, in his transition, because, you know, there's a transition period, which Trump is still in, which I think Trump is going to have the longest transition period of any administration in the history of U.S. because he just doesn't know what the hell he's doing. Anyway, that's another discussion, which will become relevant soon. But then in 2010, Obama, through, you know, TARP, Toxic Asset Recovery Program, through saving the auto industry, giving trillions of dollars in welfare to billionaire white men to save the U.S. auto industry. And vouchers. Basically, Obama saved the economy. Obama saved the economy. And saving the economy means you're continuing the ecocide that the economy depends on to be sustained. So you go from 2008, 8.740 gigatons, 2009, 8. So Obama says, I'm going to save the economy. And thus, by extension, by default, I'm going to further destroy the ecosystem. So 2010, highest emissions on recorded history. 9.14 gigatons of carbon. 2011, 9.449 gigatons of carbon emitted. 2012, 9.575 gigatons of carbon emitted. 2013, 9.735 gigatons. That was 2012. 2013, 9.735 gigatons of carbon emitted. 2014, 9.795, almost 10 gigatons of carbon emitted. So not only was Obama, after his first year, after he turned the U.S. economy around that he takes credit for, he supercharged carbon emissions of not just the U.S., because the United States is the engine of the world economy. All of the carbon emitters, in order to keep pace for U.S. demand, for U.S. growth, for U.S. elite profit, all of the other refineries, processors, emitters, shippers had to go through as well. So at the same time Obama was saving the damn climate, he was increasing, through his own policies, through his own initiatives, carbon emissions. So I don't know how we got to this point where we're saying that Trump is reversing Obama's climate policies, when Obama's climate policies didn't do a damn thing to address the core problem of the issue. So I don't care how many policies you write. I don't care if I get elected and say I'm a pro-woman president. I'm here to smash the patriarchy. And I write all these wonderful pieces of decorated paper with these wonderful golden tip pens about how I'm going to help women. But the fundamental statistics of violence against women, homelessness of women and mothers child mortality rates, mother mortality rates or maternal mortality rates, rape. You know, when all the statistics, the core statistics related to the health and well-being of women get worse, who gives a damn about how many nice things I say about women or how many nice sheets of paper? Because that's all it is. The Constitution ain't nothing but a piece of paper, toilet paper. Or as some historians call it, a menstruous rag. The Constitution don't mean nothing. Black folks have had the right to vote since 1870, black women didn't get the right to vote. But black men have had the right to vote, but could we exercise it? No, so who cares what the papers say? Who cares? Obama was not a pro-climate president. In 1997, the Kyoto Protocols were signed, which all nations, all industrialized white nations, and plus China and India, you know, said that we're going to take drastic measures to reduce our carbon outputs. 1997. That was the Kyoto Protocols, right? And Bill Clinton, the liberal, the one y'all love so much, he got it done. He got, and people were like, oh, America's never going to agree to this. And America was like, if China do it, I'll do it. China first. No, you first. You know, you first. And what did Obama do in 2011 when he was the president? He sent this guy named Todd Stern to the Durban climate talks in South Africa and basically scuttled the whole thing. So the climate, the Kyoto protocols, the agreements, the mandates that came out of there were celebrated by even liberals, even progressive, even radicals was like, it's something. It acknowledges the problem, if nothing else, and it does give us some hope. It does put us on the path to addressing greenhouse emissions, carbon emissions from fossil fuels mainly, and then from animal agriculture as well, methane emissions. And Obama tried to scuttle it. So what are you telling me? And yes, Obama put some nice words on paper about, oh, coal plow. And this thing about Obama saying we're not going to allow them to mine coal on federal lands. Let me tell you something. At the time he did that, coal was already losing to natural gas because they had this new technology called hydraulic fracking. And because of this new technology, the freaking price of natural gas started to plummet as the price of coal of extraction held the same or started going up. And then coal had a lot of bad publicity, independent, this mountaintop removal. And there were all kind of documentaries about mountaintop removal in Appalachia. They've been mining coal in Appalachia for 150 years. It's almost gone. This is not a renewable resource. It's a fixed resource. You know, there's only so much coal out there. So coal was already in decline when he stopped the expansion of it. It wasn't expanding. So Obama is a very astute politician. There's an old political saying, attack that which cannot be defended and defend that which can't be attacked. So Obama did something that literally had no political risk, but it would get us liberals, us environmental people, us who give a damn about the planet. It will make us a little stiff and a little moist. I might have to stop saying that, FCC. But it's true. All of us were like, woo, thank you, Obama, for doing something that was happening natural anyway. Coal companies were already in decline. Coal production was already in decline. Coal powered power plants had already started switching to natural gas because it's a cheaper fuel. And now there is a trade-off because hydraulic fracking contaminates the water and the soil, but coal contaminates the air. But it does, hydraulic fracking does not emit as much carbon, just a fraction of the carbon, as fossil fuel extraction and burning of coal, extraction and burning of coal. So now, instead of dying through cooking, overcooking the earth, upsetting the geological balance, the atmospheric balance of the earth, we won't kill ourselves that. We'll just poison ourselves to death. So do you want to burn yourself to death or poison yourself to death? That's the choice. Those are the kind of choices the federal government, capitalism, gives us. Forget the government. The government is a tool of the capitalists at this point. And the people are tools. The people are willing human resources, human chattel for the capitalists at this point. So Obama writes these wonderful laws, these wonderful regulations, saying, oh, you can't mine on federal lands. And then he would go to the car companies and said, I gave you trillions of dollars. After I've given you trillions of dollars, I'm going to say that you have to have mileage standards. Your cars have to be more energy efficient. They have to go further on less gas. And if you don't do it, what's he going to do? Is he going to take away your corporate charter? Is he going to sanction you? Is he going to lock up the CEOs? No, I'm just going to ask nicer next time. There were no real hard, fast demands. Even, Volkswagen lied about their auto emissions. They could have told the truth and just paid a smaller fine, but they pay a fine. Nobody goes to jail. They pollute and kill millions of people. Literally, people die every day, drop dead from the emissions from cars. If I made a product, you know, my wife and I, a passion of ours is promoting veganism. And we know if you're a non-vegan, you're listening to this show, I give it up to y'all. Y'all right. A lot of vegan food is disgusting. It tastes terrible. And I don't know why. I don't know why. But we decided we're going to make some good vegan food and make it available to people and promote vegan lifestyle and show people that they can still eat good and healthy at the same time. But anyway, if I made vegan cupcakes, vegan cheesecakes, veggie burgers, and sold them to the public, and people died, I'd go to jail. But people are dying from the emissions of cars. Children are developing lifelong chronic diseases from auto emissions. Their products kill people, direct correlation, no penalty whatsoever. Obama didn't do a damn thing about it. The environmental, the green president, my ass. But he did put the solar panels, because Carter put solar panels up. Reagan took them down. Clinton said he was going to put them, never did it. Bush was like, don't even play, don't even go there. And I don't know, is Trump going to take the solar panels off? We'll see. In the spirit of Reagan, because he said that climate change, global warming is a Chinese hoax to defeat U.S. business. So Obama did give some emission standards. He told all federal agencies have to reduce their carbon footprint. They have to become more ecological. They have to learn to recycle. They have to be more efficient in travel. If the diplomatic car has a trip, you don't take four or five cars. Let's all pile up in the same car. You know, we want to make our fleet more energy efficient, so we'll use high mileage cars. And you'll see it. You'll look at government, state and federal government and the officials, and they'll be driving electric cars. Real, it's all, but it doesn't mean a GD thing. And GD is short for goddamn. I said it. Because what's the biggest agency? What is the largest bureaucracy in the U.S. military? It is the U.S. military. I was going to say, what's the biggest bureaucracy? And now I was going to spring it on you and say military, but I let the cat off the bat. The U.S. military is the largest bureaucracy in the United States government. And not only does it take more money than any other agency of your tax dollars, it's not... I laugh every time I think there are people who really believe that the U.S. is trillions of dollars in debt because they were giving food stamps to poor black women in the ghetto, who only make up like less than 6% of the total population. And of that 6%, less than half of that 6% have ever received food stamps. But they went $1 billion in debt providing housing supplements and with food stamps to poor black mothers. They really believe that's why the U.S. government is $1 trillion in debt. They really believe that. People believe that. Their tax dollars are going to poor, lazy people. Oh, my God. People are so stupid. Anyway, Obama exempted the U.S. military from all of his climate policies, all of his efficiency standards, all of his reduced emission standards. The U.S. military was exempted. Even though the U.S. military is not just the biggest polluter in the United States, the U.S. military is the largest single polluter, greenhouse gas emitter in the world. Even bigger than BP and ExxonMobil, the U.S. military is the biggest greenhouse emitter, the biggest polluter in the world. And Obama exempted the military. So what's this game about? Don't come complaining to me about what Trump signed yesterday, about Trump scuttling the EPA, Trump reversing EPA regulation and signing executive orders for higher for destruction of emission standards, because Obama was playing you. Obama was not a climate president. And I'm not even going to go into Fukushima that happened under his watch, where he should have sent brigades of U.S. imports and inputs, because the U.S. manufactured those faulty ass things. That's a U.S. catastrophe that's still going on. You know? And if you got a Chinese, if you love China, you better get your ass over there, because that whole culture is doomed. They're doomed. You better go over there in your hazmat suit and visit all of the monuments. It's going to take a minute. But I'm telling you, China is a nuclear waste. Japan, that whole region is a nuclear wasteland. And will be for the next hundreds of thousands of years. Happened on Obama's watch using American technology. And Obama didn't even step up. The Gulf Coast, done. The U.S. didn't even finish cleaning up the Exxon Valdez spill. They haven't even really got started on the Exxon yet. They just don't report on it. And if it ain't in the news, unless a Kardashian goes down there and jumps in the water and gets covered in oil, you won't pay attention. These are ongoing disasters under Obama's watch. Obama had, let me stick with the military for a second. You know, because Obama exempted the U.S. military from CO2 emissions, right? And for all of his ecological policies. 80% of all the waste and pollution emissions coming out of the federal government, education, Congress, this FBI, CIA, ATF, DEA, all 80% of all federal emissions and energy waste and pollution, 80% of it is produced by the U.S. military, the Pentagon, a government agency. And the Pentagon is a bureaucracy. Yeah, we like to think these are heroes fighting for our freedoms. BS. They're bureaucrats. The biggest, most bloated bureaucrat. They're not fighting because they don't nobody give a damn about U.S. freedom. They just want the United States to stop stealing their resources and killing their people. Other than that, they don't care what we do over here. I guarantee you. An Afghani herd, goat herder does not give a damn about twerking in the United States. He doesn't care. He doesn't want his woman twerking in his hood, but he don't care. They don't hate us because of our freedom. They hate us because of our imperialism. And when I say us, I mean them, because I'm not an imperialist. And every opportunity I get to act against U.S. imperialism, I take that action. And whether it's through voting, and I don't protest anymore, but I'm organizing the best of my ability to subvert U.S. imperialism with everything I can. But 80%, right? So Obama, all of his policies only apply to about 20% of the outputs of the U.S. government. And what are some of the emissions from the U.S. military? Depleted uranium. Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, parts of Iran, the entire Middle East essentially is another hot zone, radioactive hot zone, because of the use of depleted uranium rounds that they tip ammunitions, everything from small handheld weapons to large artillery weapons. They coat the bullets in uranium. And when that uranium, when they shoot these uranium tipped rounds, they're essentially nuclear weapons, because a nuclear weapon is a weapon that emits radiation, a radioactive weapon. And that's why a lot of these soldiers are coming back committing suicide with all kinds of weird diseases. And again, you can go to the search engine from Gulf War Syndrome. Gulf War Syndrome is ongoing. Again, just don't report on it. Until a Kardashian develops Gulf War Syndrome, the masses won't give a damn. Y'all came to care about the soldiers. Nobody who supports any war cares about soldiers. No one who supports any type of offensive military action supports soldiers. I don't give a damn you go up to veterans in the damn airport and say, thank you for your service. The only people that can say that and really mean it are the CEOs of multinational corporations, because that's the only people they're fighting for. They're not fighting for your damn freedom. No Afghani goat herder is going to a threat to your damn freedom. Your local police department is a bigger threat to your personal freedom than even the militants overseas. But depleted uranium, which is illegal. So I shoot your mother. I blow up your house with depleted uranium round. I kill your family. But guess what? I'm going to be killing your family for the next 50,000 to 100,000 years. Because they have these things called half-life. When something is radioactive, it starts to decay. And it emits particles, radioactive particles, alpha particles. You have alpha emitter, beta emitter, X-ray. So it emits radiation over the years, and it takes decades. And that stuff can get inside. You can ingest it. You can inhale it. It can sit on, rest on the surface of your skin. It could be in your clothing. It could be in the products that you use. Radioactive. And so they're not just killing Iraqis now. They're killing Iraqis for the next 50,000 years. Same thing for Afghanistan. Same thing for Somali. Same thing for Sudanese. And then you got another form of pollution, landmines. The United States didn't sign on to the landmine moratorium. So the number one producer and distributor of illegal, this weapons, that this indiscriminate weapon, the U.S. military. Dioxin contamination, the most toxic substance known to man is dioxin. And they sprayed that all over Asia, Cambodia, Vietnam, right now today. You think the Vietnam War is over? The U.S. is still killing the Vietnamese, even though now Vietnamese is a capitalist ally. a totalitarian ally of the United States, they still killing Vietnamese babies in the womb before they're even born. And the ones that do get born are horribly deformed. They have orphanages all over Southeast Asia. Agent Orange, DuPont corporations. So dioxin contamination in the seas everywhere. Every single woman on the face of this earth has dioxin in her breast tissue, the most toxic substance known to man. And we all have trace amounts. It's killing us all slowly. Thank you, U.S. military. And then there's another process called desertification. Through bombing raids, through driving these big Humvees and tanks across the land, they are destroying the ecosystem, they're uprooting the soil, and they're desertifying. And desertification means you kill all the what they call fauna, all the life, all the things that grow. And the basis of any food chain is the plant life. You get rid of the plant life, everything else goes. That's the process of desertification. And since the beginning of the Iraq war, the U.S. military has turned over 90% of Iraq's arable land into desert. Not even through drought, not through natural geo processes, but through their own military actions, through bombing, through running tanks and creating airstrips. On the eve of the Iraq war, Iraq used to export food and drinkable water to its neighbors. It had the most sophisticated, what they call desalinization plant, where they would take ocean water and make it available for drinking, for bathing, for agriculture. They destroy all of their desalinization plants. Before Bush went into Iraq, Bush 1, Clinton, Bush 2, Obama, and now Trump, before the U.S. aggression in Iraq, Iraq was a net food exporter. They grew more food than their citizens could use, and they exported the surplus food places to other regions that were more desperate. Now, 80% of all the food in Iraq, 80% of all the food in Iraq has to be imported because they can no longer cultivate and feed themselves as a nation. And that's a direct result of the U.S. military, the agency that Obama exempted from any type of ecological or environmental regulations. And do I need to go into food Superfund sites, these contaminated sites? You know, the top emitter the list is so long. But you got like petrol chloride. Petrol chloride is the endocrine disruptor. The U.S. military is the top emitter of this toxin. And what does it do? It's an endocrine disruptor. It causes your thyroid to uptake iodine, and your thyroid starts to dysfunction to malfunction, and your thyroid is the regulatory gland for all your other glands, the rest of your what they call the endocrine system. But let me just put it in layman's term: it jacks your whole system up. Chronic fatigue, gynecomastia, any type of endocrine issue, you know, metabolic syndrome, coming from this pollutant. And it's also a respiratory toxin. Asthma. And then you got trichloroethylene, which is a carcinogenic. Heart disease causes Parkinson's. The military, I could just go down a list of literally hundreds. I won't even bore you. Just all these multi-syllabled chemicals that many of us never heard of. But the military is emitting them all over the world. And do I even need to talk about nuclear contamination? People talk about, oh, we fear nuclear war. The world has already undergone a nuclear war. From all the testing, there have been tens of thousands of nuclear bombs exploded in the atmosphere, underwater, in deep sea atomic testing. And, you know, Arizona, the world has already suffered a nuclear holocaust. Cancer rates are through the roof. Attention deficit disorder, a lot of these disorders we attribute to everything, a lot of it's just background radioactivity and contamination. Europe is the most radioactive place in the world, and Europe exports food to the United States and all around the world, radioactive food. And I'm going to tell you this, if you want to know anything, the number one world expert is this Australian doctor, Dr. Helen Caldicott. She's one of the first people to really get on this whole nuclear contamination thing even during the Cold War, back in Reagan's era. Just go look up Dr. Helen Caldicott. I can't even. And right now, all over the world, there are billions of barrels of solvents, of chemicals, and unexploded ammunition. The U.S. has military bases all over the world. It has nuclear submarines, aircraft carriers, and they have all this stuff. Like I just said, the Pentagon lost over $10 trillion unaccounted for. That stuff is sitting in jungles. You know, it's in forests. It's in the middle of urban areas. There are warehouses full of unused ammunitions. And Trump wants to give the military even more money. But Trump is going to have to work hard. Trump is working hard. The thing that he's working harder to do is to increase and surpass Obama's atrocities. He's trying to catch up with Obama for drone bombings, but Obama set the bar so high. And even before you hoop and holler about Trump and the money he's putting into the damn Pentagon, look at Trump. Obama had the highest military budget of any other president, even during wartime. Almost $700 billion a year. So what you gonna tell me about Obama's energy plan? What are we losing because of Trump's executive order? What's really going on? In fact, I mean, maybe Trump has slapped you out of your slumber. Like, I can't pretend that something's happening, some good is happening in the world anymore. My illusion, that's the worst thing Trump has done, is shake y'all out of the illusion. And to me, that's not a bad thing. Trump is horrible for the ecosystem. Trump is horrible for the environment. Trump needs to be challenged and fought and opposed on every front. But that don't mean that Obama shouldn't have been. You should have been doing this shit. No, you should have been doing this under Obama. You should have been in the streets under Obama. Oh, we were in the streets. Occupy, Black Lives Matter, we were in the streets. But many of you never connected it to Obama and the Obama administration. Y'all out in the streets marching for Black Lives Matter, Occupy Wall Street, and y'all really thought that Obama was an ally. Y'all really thought that Obama wanted to do right by us, but the mean old Republicans just wouldn't let him. Boo-hoo-hoo. Obama was and continues to be an enemy of the people. And we're not, and none of this started with Trump. That's what y'all used to love to say.
Oh, stuff was bad before. How you gonna get on Obama? Things was bad. Obama didn't start. This was already like this before Obama got in office.
Yeah, none of it started with Obama. Just like none of it started with Trump. But I can tell you one thing. Obama took that baton of imperialism, took that baton of ecocide and oppression, and he ran with it like only a black man can run. He Usain Bolted with that baton to pass it off to, he wanted to pass it off to Hillary. But he passed it off to Trump, you know. Which in a way, I can't even see, because the federal government has been an enemy of the people since it was captured by the elite interests. But the same people, y'all love the rich. Y'all, they tell you, oh, the government's the problem. The government is not the damn problem. And the government can be a tool in the solution. And I know Umar, don't vote, all that nonsense. These stupid black demagogues. I'm not calling you a leader if you're a demagogue. If you don't have real solutions, if you don't work for the interests of the people, you're not a leader, you're a demagogue. And I know I don't even like misleader, because misleader means is because they say the black misleadership. But that means, you know, I want to do right, but I made a mistake. We're only human. Now, you're not a misleader. You're not trying to lead the people and make a mistake, a misstep, a misdirection. You're deliberate. So I'm calling out these demagogues that are giving us the wrong information, that are pushing us in the wrong direction. So, yes, Trump is just nakedly doing what Obama had already done. Obama set Trump up lovely. Oh, he's building on what Obama did. He's not tearing it down. Let me say that again. Trump is building on what Obama did, not tearing it down. The only thing he's not doing is using the same rhetoric and misdirection and deception that Obama. He's not as good as that. But he don't have to be good at it. because he don't even pretend to give a damn about the progressive ideas, about justice, about the people, about the Constitution. Obama pretended to give a damn. So Obama had to dance and skirt around the issues. Obama would say good things and do horrible things. Trump says horrible things and does horrible things. That's the difference. You want somebody to talk nice to you? You don't want to hear the truth. So I'm going to lie to you, make it sound fly to you. You know, that's the only difference. Now, what can you do? Because I don't want to talk and jawbone about the problems without offering solutions. And let me tell you this. You're a real SOB. If you live in the Western world, because whenever I talk about veganism, people want to run to the Inuits and tell me about Inuits and their whale blubber. You want to run to Kenya, to rural Kenya, and talk about the Maasai drinking cat oxen blood. And let me tell you, I will grant you a vegan exemption if you take your ass up to the Arctic Circle and hunt walruses in canoes with the Inuits, and then eat all the blubber you can get down your gullet. Or if you want to give up your iPhone, give up your air conditioning, give up your automobile and all that, and go live in rural Kenya with the Maasai and herd goats, then by all means, you get an exemption. But if you live in a modern industrialized society, if your food comes to you not by your own hunting skill, but by your driving skill to pull into the driving parking lot of Mariano, Safeway, Thrift Store, whatever, Skaggs, wherever you get your food, all these different stupid grocery stores and supermarkets, Whole Foods, shout out, came front. I dig Whole Foods. But anyway, that's not the point. If you're eating meat, if you're consuming meat and dairy, you are an enemy of children everywhere. Because the number one thing you can do, a vegan driving an SUV, living in a McMansion in the suburbs, is more ecological than a meat eater who drives a bike, doesn't use a car, and lives in a tent in the forest. Changing your fundamental way you sustain your life is the number one thing you can do. Not the only thing you can or should do. That's step one. Go vegan. If you give a damn about the children, if you give a damn about the ability for life to sustain itself, the vegan, the amount of resources, land, water, and energy resources that it takes to feed one meat eater can feed over a dozen vegans with the same amount of inputs. So consuming vegan does less damage to the ecosystem. It conserves water. And guess what? Animals, it saves animals. And these animals feel. These animals have central nervous systems, so they don't speak. And they don't twerk, and they don't produce porn videos. But other than that, they have central nervous systems. They can feel. They have attachments. We call them families. They call them herds. They form bonds throughout life. You know, pigs are more intelligent than dogs. You know, so respect animal rights. You know, leave the meat and flesh to the real carnivores, to the true omnivores of the world. And let's go back. Let's make a deliberate, conscious choice to devolve, to go back to our frugarian, herbivorous roots. Let's make that, because that's the number one thing you can do for the environment. That's the most immediate, direct, and deliberate thing. And every time someone converts to a vegan diet, that's an economic indicator saying that people want to save the earth and that there can be profit. And I know we got to deal with the system. I'm not a utopianist. That's why I don't say destroy the system. I say dismantle it. I say don't destroy the system because it's not realistic. We don't have. But now, if I woke up tomorrow and there were 50 million African people at my door saying, hey, we ready to go, and then I'd be like, burn this mother down. When I got power, I'm going to use it. But since I wake up in the morning and it's just King Dita standing outside my door like, hey, let's go cultivate some food in the city. You know, let's build. And that, I have to work with that. So somebody that only has one or two allies in their city and maybe a dozen allies around the world, I can't say bring down the system. It's just not realistic. And I don't like selling pipe dreams. I'm not Obama. I'm not the demagogue Dr. Umar. I'm not Farrakhan. I ain't no salvation. I can't sell you dreams. I can only be realistic. So I advocate that we dismantle the system. And one of the things we do to remove one brick, one stone from the wall of oppression is to adopt a vegan diet and lifestyle and then educate ourselves about it so that we can intelligently articulate our positions to other people, scientifically articulate the benefits. And then our own lives, our own presence will be evidence of the efficacy of our ideas and our practices. So go vegan. That's the first and most immediate thing you can do. That's baseline. Because if you ain't vegan, I'm not trying to hear anything else you've got to say about the environment, the planet, or loving children. And it really blows my mind. If you can have babies, you can look at your own children knowing they're going to have to make a life on this same planet. And you don't do the most basic immediate thing. So the first thing you're going to do, and if you're really upset about Trump and his gutting the EPA and him putting a man who sued the EPA, Scott Pruitt, over the EPA, if you're really pissed off about it, stop sucking on bone gristle. Stop slurping bone marrow. Stop eating the dead carcasses of animals. And not only do you stick it to the man, you're helping to save your own damn life. You're giving yourself more active years of combat against the system. And so tomorrow I'm going to go into other things we can do individually first, and then on a community basis within your home, and then on a nationwide, statewide, and global basis to bang on this beast, to liberate the land, the people, the resources of Earth. But I got to wrap this gabble up, B. But I truly appreciate y'all. Go vegan. You know, and if I'm preaching to the choir, fine. If you're already vegan, go spread veganism. You know, let's go. Let's say, hey, I'm down. Like, we can go door to door. I'm down. Let's Jehovah's idiot this thing. Let's go out here like the Jehovah's Witness and Jehovah's idiots, whatever they are. Let's take it door to door. And I see y'all Friday, and I'm going to talk about some more things we can do on a personal level to truly save the planet and to end this artificial Armageddon of ecocide. Thank you for listening. Please go to Diallokenyatta.com. Click on that Patreon button. Become a patron of the so we can do more. We can get more sophisticated, more professional, up and young. We can get Diallo Kenyatta, Bro Diallo TV off the ground. We can get this Bro Diallo publishing off the ground. We got a lot of things to do, man. Media, counter-propaganda, counter-indoctrination. That's what we're doing over here. Pan-African perspective. I see y'all Friday morning. Diallokenyatta.com. Go to AfricanWorldOrder.com. The first of many, well, not the first, but the current of many future cooperative enterprises. All right, y'all? All right, peace.